It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Philip Elmer DeWitt is here. Lori Gill, Dan Patterson from CBS. And there's lots to talk about, including Apple's big celebrity event. The Lyft IPO lifts off, supply chain vulnerabilities, and the right to repair. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 712, recorded Sunday, March 31st, 2019. Cultured Hill Folk. This Week in Tech is brought to you by CashFly. Give your users the seamless online experience they want. Power your site or app with CashFly CDN and be 30% faster than the competition. Learn more at twit.cashfly.com. And by Casper, a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. Get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/twit and using the promo code TWIT at checkout. And by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage. From the founders of Carbonite comes the cloud storage technology that's disrupting the industry. See for yourself with free unlimited storage for a month. Go to wasabi.com, click free trial, and use the offer code TWIT. And by Quip. Get a fresh start every day with Quip, the first electric subscription toothbrush accepted by the American Dental Association. Visit getquip.com/twit to get your first refill pack free when you purchase any Quip electric toothbrush. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news. Our panel this week, the esteemed Dan Patterson. Hello, Dan. Coming to us from
good evening.
CBS Interact. Good evening. This is where? New York?
Yeah, I'm at CBS News in a little focus room here.
This is Brooklyn. Dan is
No, this is Manhattan.
Manhattan. I like it. Good to see you. I haven't seen you in ages. How's things going?
Hey, everything is great. So I am working for CNET as a producer, but embedded at CBS News. So we are covering hard news, but how technology impacts the entire news cycle. As we know, in the last decade or so, tech has gone from being a vertical to a horizontal. So it's my job to help news understand tech.
Good luck.
Can you talk to our government, too? Can you help our government understand tech?
Hey, that's Lori Gill, managing editor at iMore. And we love having Lori. She's a regular on MacBreak Weekly and from time to time joins us on the weekly show, the News Roundtable. Hi, Lori.
Hi, how are you?
I am great. Your voice has recovered a little bit from your show.
A little bit. It'll be broken again next week, though.
That's awesome. She's a punk rocker and roll singer with the band Sick Burn, among others. And Philip Elmer DeWitt, who gave up his punk career some years ago, used to be at CBGB on a regular basis. He is now the man in charge at PED30.com, his news blog. Good to have you, Philip.
You know, I was trained once how to punch words like Dan does. You can tell he's worked in television.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
But I've forgotten everything I
can't do it.
You do it.
I tried, you know, I worked in radio for 40 years. I've worked in television for several decades, and I just can't punch the words. The only time I can do it is if I do my Walter Cronkite impression. Then I can do it.
But I'm sitting next to an Emmy that was given to Walter
Cronkite. Wow. See, there's history there at CBS. The Tiffany
there is.
Network.
This broadcast center is falling apart, but it's also loaded with that was the history of journalism.
That was my experience, too. I was so excited to go to NBC and 30 Rock, go up in the elevator to do the Today Show, and the paint's peeling on the windowsills. It's just, you know, it looks better from afar.
The illusion has been broken.
Everything looks better from afar.
Your studio is tight and crisp and freshly painted.
Have you been here?
Well, it was last time I was there. It's been so long.
No, we keep it up pretty well. I have a very good team that keeps it up pretty nice. But it's also not as old as CBS or NBC. Someday, it'd be fun, wouldn't it?
Not yet.
In the Leo Laporte Memorial Studio. Yeah, Leo used to work here. No, that'll never happen. Monday, weirdly enough, Apple decided to do an event at the Steve Jobs Theater, a glittering event. They practically had a red carpet. Had Joan Rivers been still alive, she probably would have welcomed the celebrities. There's a big picture Apple took before the event of all of the celebrities gathered. I'm going to see if I can find that. It was Vanity Fair worthy. It was very impressive. And not all the celebrities took the stage. Only a handful did. But for some reason, they had many more people. Let's see. Picture celebrities, Steve Jobs Theater. That should be the Google foo to get this.
I needed an annotated version. I didn't know half these people.
Yeah, me too. I kept mistaking Reese Witherspoon for Drew Barrymore and Octavia Spencer for Oprah Winfrey. No, I knew that was Oprah. Who else could wear Superman's cape and a bolo tie? Holy cow. Look at that. There's the moment. Remember the moment when Bono and Tim Cook touched fingers?
When this moment right here on stage with Oprah Winfrey happened, I leaned over to Renee and was like, oh, thank goodness no awkward high five just happened.
No, but in the Me Too era, I think it's kind of interesting that Tim is studiously avoiding touching Oprah and mm-hmm. she's rubbing his belly. Like for good luck. And he wiped
a tear from his eye afterwards.
He did. He wiped a tear. Yeah. You know why he started crying? When Oprah said, billions of phones in the in their pockets, y'all. Billions. That was when Tim went, yes. Yes. That's the way to talk about it, Oprah. Here's a big guy. I think this is The Rock. I don't know who that is. Some muscle-bound. No, it's not.
It's Khal Drogo.
It's Khal Drogo. Yep. That's right.
That's the only thing I know him from, even though I know he's more famous now.
Jason Momoa of Aquaman fame, who completely... That's Alfre Woodard. They star in a show, and I'm reading the captions, called C. The premise is in set in the distant future, all of humanity is blind. Moving on. Here they are in front of a picture of water.
Which they can't see
because it's a green
screen. That's the Mac screensaver, actually. Yeah. That's just the background of a Mac screensaver.
Oh, well, there you go. The funniest thing was... There's these are all blackouts, right? They don't give the celebrities, you know, they don't make them walk on and off stage in the light. So the lights go dark. Wait. Did it seem like a long time in the theater? Let's watch the stream.
This one was particularly long because they had to bring the box out.
Big Bird and his puppet friend.
Yeah, and they had to sort of escort Big Bird out too, because obviously it's really difficult.
He can't walk.
Walk on stage. So yeah, he needed a lot of help.
Could you see in the? So you were there too, Philip.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Could you see in the theater that them coming on stage, or was it just as dark there?
No, totally black.
Wow.
Totally black.
I think it was intended to be dramatic. It didn't. It kind of didn't work.
This is scary as hell.
Here's Steven Spielberg, very tweety. In a vest and tweed jacket with a picture of Steven Spielberg looking like Steve Jobs is all I can say. it's just kind of weird. There's Tim in his sneaks and he looks kind of collegiate, like a, you know, Professor Tim. Kind of cute. Here's new Memojis. I don't know why we're seeing that.
Is that it? I don't think we're in the right show now.
You never did find.
Oh, I'm sorry. I went to Jennifer Aniston's 50th birthday party. I couldn't resist. I'm in the Hollywood Life section. There's a Reese, who I still think of as Drew. I don't know why. That's Jennifer. No, that's not Jennifer. That's Gwyneth. Oh, this Miss Goop. Yeah. I did not intend this to be the celebrity gossip show. This is a tech show. We're talking about the Apple event.
Celebrity and tech have now intertwined, so I guess we're going to cover celebrities now, aren't we?
So, good. I'm glad you guys were there. Dan, you probably were not.
Yeah, we streamed it, but
yeah, we streamed it.
I mean, a fascinating event, and it's fascinating for Meta levels as well as Apple's obvious shift to services. The impact of this on the creative sector will be really fascinating to watch. What they didn't show are all of the workers on the back end of all of these services, whether it's news services, media and television and entertainment, or gaming. All of these services are in some way now in the pocket of Apple, and what's up for debate, at least in the communities we chatter with, is, you know, what will this do to premium services? Will it commodify premium services, or will it elevate them?
Philip?
You know what else they didn't show at that event, and yet you sort of had to be there to get the full lack, was, you know, they've been working for nearly 2 years, nearly as long as Robert Mueller. They've had the two guys.
Is that the new unit of time, a Mueller?
A Mueller, one Mueller.
One Mueller. That's the long unit of time, and the short unit of time is a Scaramucci.
Okay. They had the two guys, two producers from Sony who made Breaking Bad and The Crown and all that stuff.
They didn't get any credit, but those are the guys who brought in all of these celebrities, right?
Yeah, yeah. They also weren't quite introduced right. And then, so we all gathered. I thought we were going to see some trailers. So these guys stand up and they talk about the show they're going to have, and they show a slide. One slide from whatever they're doing, and it's a real wide angle slide, and it wraps around the stadium all the way to the sides of the walls, which are not flat. So it's just like this weird stripy line going around the theater. We keep waiting for it to move because we want to see what they've been shooting, and they never show it. And what they do show is the so-called sizzle reel,
right,
which is like a little over a minute of snippets. And one TV guy afterwards, I was saying, well, they did show the snippet reel, and he looked up angry. The snippet reel don't count.
No, and in fact, people who are in the media said this looked like an upfront. Those are the events that the networks have to pitch new shows to advertisers. And of course, they bring out the celebrities and not just advertisers, but affiliates, the stations in the network. And they bring out the celebrities because that's who the affiliate guys and the advertisers want to see. But they always show clips. Here's the hero shot with Oprah in the middle. And by the way, they all changed their clothes. This is before the event.
Right. That's right. That's right.
They're all wearing different clothes, which is just how Hollywood this was.
Are you sure this isn't Photoshopped?
B2B.
This is in the Steve Jobs Theater. See on the right that elevator that goes down to the theater? We now know what that giant open space on the first floor is for, because it's never been used. It was for getting all these celebrities together in one shot. Many of them did not get on stage. Those who did wore completely different outfits. There's M. Night Shyamalan. There's Jason Momoa, but there's also people who didn't get on stage, people like Jennifer Garner, what's his name? Jesse from Breaking Bad, Aaron Paul. There's a bunch of celebrities here who did not get their shot in the limelight, including the luckiest little girl in the world. I don't know who she is. I think she's in C. Of course, she's too young to really appreciate what she's experiencing here, but that's a lot of star power.
Or she's wise beyond her years and does understand.
Yeah, she said, my agent said I wouldn't have to sit here that long. Give me a cigarette.
Leo, are you sure that wasn't Photoshopped?
This is not. This is all. These people were all in the theater. That's how I
know
that.
I don't know that for sure. Did you see them all? I don't know that.
No, I didn't
see
them.
There's not everybody, but there has been other little video clips that kind of popped up on social media. And I think, Leo, you had shown one that
Chris
was
Evans.
Oprah.
Yeah,
Oprah. Jennifer Garner.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so people that were not up on stage, some people that were not up on stage have kind of popped up as part of, know, people just putting up video clips of them. So though it's not everyone that's on that stage, confirmed, there are a few people that were not on stage that were at the event that we never saw. As far as I know, they weren't sitting in the audience. I even did a quick scan. Obviously, I was in the way back, so I'm not going to be able to tell from sitting in the back looking down. But I would think that there would have been more sort of hype or fervor around any celebrities sitting in one of the front rows. So I'm not sure that they were even in the theater. I think they might have been in a different area.
Oh, they were in the celebrity section, of course. Mm-hmm. There probably is a secret place. One of the things I did have to note, and I'm sure Apple wasn't happy about this, not a lot of Apple watches in evidence on these rich and famous people. A lot of nice watches, but I only count one or two Apple watches, and even those are maybe not Apple watches. So,
and even from people that have, like, in the past sort of shown off their Apple watches.
Yeah, you got to figure Tim Cook says, dude, I gave you that $25,000 gold watch. You're not wearing it? But that was Series Zero, man. I'm not going to keep wearing that. Give me the new one. Somebody tweeted, and I think this was an apt tweet, that Hollywood is the only industry that loves itself as much as Apple loves itself. And so it's a match made in heaven. Isn't it, really, if you think about it? It's very self-congratulatory, all of this.
Although all those celebrities are being paid by Apple to make their shows. It's not like they're falling over themselves to get on the platform. Let me say one thing about the upfronts. The audience for the upfronts, it's very clear, is for the advertisers to let them know what's coming.
Yeah, they buy ad time at that point. There's no ads here, right?
No.
This is an upfront for the people who had subscribed to the service.
But that's what you'd think. But then you'd think you'd show some TV shows so that we'd be attracted to the service. I've got a new theory that there are two other audiences that we're not thinking of. It really wasn't an audience for the journalists, because I know I was disappointed, and I wasn't the only one, right, that we didn't see more TV. I think the audiences were, A, Wall Street – which needed to be persuaded, or it needed to be underlined, correct, that we're switching to services. And B was the Hollywood community that they're saying, look, we've got Oprah, we've got Jennifer, you know, we've got all these people. We're look how much we're promoting them. Come to our platform to make your exclusive stuff for us.
This is a B2B event.
Yeah, like that.
Or actor-to-actor event, or director-to-director event. Right. And in fact, the one piece they did show, which was very, I thought, disharmonious, was a bunch of directors, Spielberg and Shyamalan and others, talking about how hard their job was. And I thought, really, that's what you want to talk about here? Not what a great show you've made, what a wonderful partnership with Apple, just how hard it is. To do what you do?
I would argue that there is one additional audience, and that was the rest of the tech industry, and that is for the same point, that this was this is a show of force, right?
Yeah, it is a show of force.
Star power. Yeah. Mm-hmm. To say to the other actors in the tech industry, particularly Amazon and Netflix, look what we have that you don't.
Yeah, that definitely kind of saying, you know, either jump on board or you're going to see how much you're going to lose out if you don't join us. And I combine,
Now, Philip, you're, like me, an old-time Apple fan. And in the early days, I embraced Apple because it was the computer for the rest of us. It was almost hippie. Steve Jobs was a hippie. It was counterculture. It was those guys in the suits, back to the 1984 commercial, those guys in the suits use IBM, were the creatives. We think different. We're the lucky one, you know,
the crazy ones.
This is despicable from that point of view. I find this horrible. This is Apple as the 1%.
What aspect of it is despicable?
What's been happening to me over the last few years, Apple, okay, this is the most negative description. You can all shoot me down. What has happened to me is, somebody who loved Apple as the crazy ones, Apple has seen a plateau in its sales, and more importantly, I think, a plateau in its ability to innovate. They haven't been able to find that secret sauce since the iPad, maybe the Apple Watch, certainly not, people say, the AirPods. Come on, really? That's the best you can come up with? So there's this kind of plateauing of innovation. And what happens when a company gets to that point is sales plateau as well, because there's no reason to buy the new thing if it's no better than the old thing. And we've seen this in other industries. The car industry is a good example. They really weren't able to improve on cars much after the 50s. So they added fins. They added chrome. It became a fashion industry. And to me, everybody's talking about this is a pivot of Apple from being a hardware company to a services company. This is continuing the pivot Apple's been making ever since the Apple Watch from a counterculture creative company to a fashion company. They're all about fashion. And why fashion? Because fashion, you got to buy a new one every season. Doesn't matter that the hemlines are, you know, better. They're not better. They're just different. That's why you have to buy a new outfit. And I think that's unfortunately what's happened to Apple. And I for one, am disappointed. And I think if you look at the Macintosh, if you look at the stuff that Apple's put out lately, it has been a grave disappointment.
Now, our behavior has been trained.
Go ahead. I'll let you go, Dan, and then Philip. Go ahead.
Sorry, Philip. We have been trained to expect innovation on a pretty unreasonable schedule, meaning like every 6, 12, and 18 months. And what Apple did is capitalize in the last decade and a half, capitalize on the emergence and growth of gadgets in a technology ecosystem that was fairly sustainable. We could grow from the miniaturization of things like the iPod into 3G and then 4G, because those were fairly fast iterations in the technology that supported the miniaturization of devices. But the next real innovations are going to be the Internet of Things, data, and maybe powered by 5G, although these things are all coming a lot slower than how we've been trained to expect the tech innovation cycle to flow. So it's just going to take a lot longer for things like 5G to power IoT, and IoT is just not as understandable by a consumer audience as something like a mini pocketable supercomputer.
So yes, it's an industry-wide problem, but Apple will not be on the forefront of 5G.
No.
Go ahead, Philip.
Well, you raised a lot of points. So let's see if we can separate them. In terms of fashion, you know, hiring the head of Burberry's is plays right into your argument.
Yeah, but she's gone now, oddly enough. Maybe there wasn't enough fashion for Angela Ahrens.
I see that strategy as looking at their install base, which is huge and which is rich.
Billion phones, y'all.
Yep. And marketing to it. You know, they know who their customers are. They know what kind of disposable income they have. A lot of the customers can afford to buy a new color watch band whenever they change their suit. And, you know, there's money to be made. They're not leaving it on the table. It's certainly not Steve Jobs in an ashram, but it's understandable what they're doing. The other thing, though, about innovation is I tend to think of Apple kind of like the Pixar of technology. They make hits. They do screw up from time to time, whereas Pixar doesn't. But they, you know, they've got this system for iterating, and they've got you know, they've got really good access to the next technology that's coming. They hire some pretty smart engineers. So I'm assuming that what we have right now is sort of the interregnum between the watch and the AirPods, which I disagree about the AirPods. I think the AirPods are a magnificent piece of technology that nobody else can equal right now, because Apple can miniaturize better than a lot of their competitors. But that Apple, I assume, is working on other stuff. And we hear rumors and of things about glasses with things printed on them on the inside, and cars way down if that ever happens. You're assuming that Apple is going to fail at those things. I'm assuming, based on their track record, that they'll probably deliver something. Either they'll deliver something that's pretty compelling, or they'll drop it like the AirPower. You know, if it ain't good, they're not going to make it. Anyway, that's my take on what you're saying there.
You still have hope for the future.
Leo, what you're saying makes a lot of sense, though, that what else is a company going to do when it's gotten as big as it can possibly get? It has to figure out a way to keep having people participate in
true.
It. And if Apple were, you know, like it was in the 80s and it never grew, then it would have been just this great little niche thing for creatives and hippies. And it didn't, though. It grew. So now it is trying to find another way. And I think what you're saying about it being sort of aligned more with fashion makes a lot of sense and is certainly a great way for Apple to market their future is to get people interested in needing a reason to upgrade every single year. And just like a new pair of pants, your current pair of pants are fine, but you want to upgrade because it's the new trend. So yeah, that's actually a great analogy and makes a lot of sense.
And honestly, that's good business. I'm not saying it's bad business, but I wish Apple were selling the steak still and not the sizzle.
Right. But if you were to with that kind of like, you know, in hindsight, I wish Apple, you wouldn't have the job you have right now if Apple were only selling the steak, right? It would have been too small of a company. It couldn't have grown big enough to become something that the rest of us can actually sustain a career based off of. You know what I mean?
Oh, I don't base my career on Apple, thank God.
Well, you know, like the technology in general.
I don't get invitations to Apple. Why? Who knows? No one knows. I never asked Apple, and I don't care to know. It's fine because we cover it here. Apple lately has started to get a little, and I don't know if it's Apple to blame or the general trend in tech and Google's YouTube adhering to it, but we keep getting taken down. The last time Apple did a live event, we streamed it on YouTube Live as we always did with commentary, fair use, and it was taken down and in fact, not just taken down, but our whole YouTube Live channel was down for a month. So we no longer can stream Apple events on YouTube. We put portions of the Apple event in our show iOS Today and MacBreak Weekly. Those were taken down. We appealed and they got put back up pretty quickly because it is legal fair use. It's a news show commenting on an Apple event. But I think it's possible Apple has upped its campaign against us. I don't know. But I don't care. We're going to cover the story regardless. And I'm not mad at Apple. I still buy Apple stuff. It's not that I'm mad at them. I'm disappointed, if anything. And maybe you're right, Philip. Maybe that innovation is out in the distance and there's nothing to be had right now. Certainly, Apple's not alone. Silicon Valley is in this doldrums right now. But I look at things like Apple Pay, which had great promise and has not taken off. So Apple's trying to shore that up with Apple Card.
Apple Pay, I don't know, what, 10 billion purchases this year they're talking about?
Yeah. I think of all digital payment forms, it's taken off more than anything at all.
I think it's widely considered a failure. Because,
really?
Yeah. People still use credit cards.
I disagree. Well, yeah.
but that's part of the problem. And one of the reasons you create a credit card, if you're Apple, is because Apple Pay isn't as successful as they would like it to be. Now, it's not I guess we could universal. Debate the success of Apple Pay or not, but
it's not as universal as they'd like. In Europe and Australia, apparently, everybody takes Apple Pay. They don't in the U.S. They're pretty good in Greenfield, Massachusetts, actually. Yeah. But and that's the reason for the card. If they don't take Apple Pay at that particular register, you pull out your titanium card and you stick it in and you're done.
I guess you could say Apple Pay is a success for the U.S., but is dwarfed by mobile payments in every other country. China, for instance. Look, here's a graph. China mobile payments versus U.S. mobile payments. You can't even see the U.S. bars. They're the dark red ones way down at the bottom. China's the pink ones way at the top. And this is in trillions.
That's 15,
19.
But
was Apple competing against other
this is older, so.
U.S. vendors like PayPal and Venmo, which is owned by PayPal? So I wonder if when we look at market share, we talk about market share, yeah, globally, it's dwarfed by other markets. But if we look at the market that is just payment transfer for platforms, Apple Pay may have done okay.
Yeah, and I don't need to debate the success or failure of Apple Pay. clearly the reason for the card is to stimulate its growth. And I think the card is maybe the most interesting thing Apple announced on Monday. By the way, one more thing before we get to the card. Only one thing that Apple showed is available now, and that's News Plus, which is a very little changed version of the texture app that they bought, added to Apple News. Everything else is down the road a piece. The card maybe in the summer, the TV and the arcade in the fall, no prices announced for those. So these are very early announcements of the other three products. But I think the credit card potentially is huge for Apple.
It's got a lot of keen features. The 3% cash back the next day. They're not the only ones who do that, but it's one of the nice things.
They're not even the largest of the, I mean, somebody said, okay, 3% on Apple purchases, by the way, it's only 2% right. on everything else, but 3% on Apple purchases, or I can go to Target, buy it with my Target card and get 5%. Lori, I think you were talking about this on Tuesday.
Yeah.
That it isn't necessarily the best credit card deal out there. You've really got to look at it carefully.
Definitely. Right. Was it TechCrunch that put out something that had a little more details?
They talked about how it worked. Yeah, that was a good article. Yeah. I don't know how Panzerino, I don't know how he found that stuff out, but
there was some really interesting little tidbits in there that actually I was impressed with. For the biggest one, I mistakenly assumed that the interest rate that you would get, which is between 13 and 24%, if you miss a payment or have a late payment, that you would be charged a late rate.
Yeah, we all reported that, and Panzerino said that's not true.
That, to me, is a really big deal that they're not going to charge a late interest rate, because that is exactly one of those high expenses that makes I'd rather have a late fee than to have my interest rates go up even 1 or 2%, because that goes forever until you can reevaluate your interest rate or your credit score. So that's such a big deal that they are not going to do that there's no late fee and there's no interest rate charge based off of whether or not you have a missed payment or a late payment on that. So that,
to quote Matthew, Apple Card has no late fees and no penalty rates. You'll continue to pay your agreed upon interest rate on your outstanding balance. It will impact your credit score. So this is an important thing to point out. All the privacy Apple talked about aside, they're still reporting all transactions and payments to Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking of credit scores, I tried to find out what the cutoff was.
Because the interest rate's 13 to 24%, depending on your credit.
Right, but some people won't be able to get an Apple Card at all. If your credit score is in the toilet, Apple's not going to give you a card any more than anybody else was.
Right.
So I was trying to find out what the score is, and someone told me that it was going to be 800, which is extraordinarily high and very hard to maintain.
No one has an 800. Well, I don't have an 800.
And it's dead on arrival if that's what it is.
It won't
someone
be
else
high.
Told. I read somewhere else that it was probably 70 plus, which is more like it. It from Apple's literature, it sounds like they'll take your credit, they'll give you the card, but they're going to adjust your interest rates depending on how bad your credit score is.
So this is what Panzerino says. Apple interest rates aren't really much different than other credit cards. The lowest is 13.24%. The highest is 24%. But he says Apple will do something innovative. They'll place users who sign up at the lower end of the tier they land in due to their credit score. So you may get a lower rate from Apple. You'll have to. I think the most important thing, and this is what I've been telling people, is don't just say, "Oh, it's Apple. It's a titanium card. I have to have it." But actually compare rates using NerdWallet or something like that to see what the rate you're going to get. But if this is true, then Apple might give you a better rate for your credit score than others will. I don't know what the minimum is.
And speaking of innovation, a guy from England that watches the tech, what's it called? FinTech industry says that there's a lot of innovation and turmoil in FinTech in Europe. There's a bank, a German bank called A26 that already sells metal cards or gives out metal cards.
Well, I have a metal, just like my American Apple Express cards. Is a metal card.
Right, because you have the platinum. And the A26 card already works with Apple Pay. I mean, this thing is already being done.
Yeah.
Most of these elements are already being done in Europe. And Apple is catching up to the fintech innovation that's sweeping the rest of the world, apparently.
It did crack me up that the only traditional Apple video of a product announcement at this event was the titanium card. And right. they the laser burning it and all of that. So, That amused me. All right, Apple Card, potentially good. Again, we won't know till the details are out there. There were a lot of footnotes on the Apple webpage that you had to read to figure out exactly what you were getting. 1% cash back on regular credit card transactions, 2% on Apple Pay transactions, 3% on purchases from Apple. It's cash immediately delivered to your balance.
I think the next day. The next day.
Next cycle. I think they said at the event right away. But anyway, I don't know. How do you get the money out?
If that has anything to do with what they've changed with Apple Cash, it would be for a 25 cent or I think it was 25 cents or 1% charge. You can get it immediately, or you can wait till next day, which is that's pretty normal for those kind of like peer-to-peer style things. So it's probably something similar to that, where if you need your, 1%, 2%, or 3% cash back right now to give you 2 gallons of gas or something like that, you can pay that 25 cent fee, or you can just wait until it goes into your bank account.
Be prepared to set up an automatic transfer from your bank. That's how you pay your balance, ACH, from a bank account. Or if you've accumulated enough Apple Cash via Apple Cash. The physical card is not a touch-to-pay card, which cracks me up.
Right.
You got to use your phone and your watch.
You'd have to put a radio in it if it were going to be touch-to-pay.
Well, a lot of credit cards are, though, aren't they? I mean, yeah okay.
Isn't that what I am very I have no experience or very little experience with this, but the credit cards that you would use in European countries that have the chip in it, isn't that what makes it an international credit card? And
you need the chip. Doesn't mean you can touch to pay.
Okay, that's the difference. The chip has nothing to do with whether or not it's tap to pay.
Right.
Yeah.
That's my understanding. Sometimes you have to put you have a chip card. You put it in there and you let it sit for a while.
Right. Yeah.
I have to admit, I use Apple Pay whenever I can because I wear an Apple Watch all the time. And it is the most convenient way if you have an Apple Watch.
Also, it's so much faster than the chip readers. The chip readers
actually are so slow.
Yeah.
All right. I think they're going to make money on this. There's no fees. There's no international transaction fee, which makes it good. I mean, they didn't say what the exchange rates would be. They could easily make a little extra money by fiddling with the exchange rate.
I'm not sure they'll make money. I think they're just building the wall around the walled garden thicker,
Isn't it? That's exactly what this is.
And it's one step closer to your devices being a subscription. Everything is just a subscription and you pay a fee, right?
It makes a lot of sense. Everything works better if you would just stop fighting it and use all Apple products.
Exactly.
And honestly, I mean, the iPhone has been a subscription for at least mine for the last 2 years or so.
Right. You do that because you want a new iPhone every year.
Yeah. And I mean, I use Android devices as well. And I use the two against each other, at least the feature sets. But yeah, my primary personal device is an iPhone. And I know that, all right, this is going to cost me XYZ every year. Whether I'm paying monthly or annually, it really doesn't matter. And I will remain an Apple customer. So I think their hope is let's retain our customers, customer retention, right?
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. If you want to talk more Apple, we could talk about the arcade, which, again, like Google's Stadia announcement of the week before, is a really kind of a sketch, not a filled-in promise. And then if you want Apple TV Plus, there's still a lot more to talk about. So we will continue with our... Oh, and yes, Air Power. We hardly knew ye. Lori Gill from iMore. She's managing editor. Philip Elmer DeWitt, PED 30. He's the chief cook and bottle washer. Did you give yourself a title at PED 30?
Yeah, I'm the editor-in-chief.
Good. That sounds good. Editor-in-chief at PED 30. And Dan Patterson, who is a senior producer at CNET and CB, embedded, as he says, he's embedded in the drywall at CBS News, right next to that Edward R. Murrow Emmy. Our show today brought to you by CashFly, quite literally brought to you by CashFly. If you download our shows from our website, or if you subscribed in a podcast application, you may notice how fast our podcasts come in compared to other podcasts. You may notice there's never a hitch in the giddy up. It just gets there quickly. That's because we use a content delivery network, a CDN, and we use the best CDN, CashFly. You should be using CashFly too. Power your site or your app with CashFly's CDN. You'll be 30% faster than the competition at a lot less money. No matter what industry you're in, if your website is tied to company revenue or your podcasts or your app, give your customers the fast download they need with CashFly. A CDN delivers rich media content directly from a server near your customer. CashFly has servers all over the world, and it's up to 10 times faster than the traditional delivery methods. But CashFly is even faster than their competitors, 30% faster than the other major CDNs. And because there's so many servers, CashFly can offer a 100% SLA. You're never offline. CashFly guarantees the best user experience for all your customers, no matter what or where. And I have to say, as a CashFly user for 10 years now, that's how Twit's delivered to our audience. Never a 3 a.m. call. The CDN's down. And I don't ever have to worry about the bill, because they work with you to get you a custom plan tailored to your needs based on yearly usage trends. It evens out all the spikes. On average, customers who switch to CashFly will save more than 20%. LG uses CashFly. Microsoft uses CashFly. Adobe and Ars Technica use CashFly. Of course, we do too. Just for you, because you're listening, CashFly is giving you a complimentary detailed analysis of your current CDN bill so you can see what you'd save. Look at the usage trends. No pressure, just information. See if you're overpaying 20% or more for a CDN at twit.cashfly.com. Cut your CDN costs without sacrificing performance, reliability, or availability. It's twit.cashfly.com. We don't have to spend all this time on Apple's event, but there were a few other announcements. First, Apple News. Any thoughts on that? All of you are in the news business.
I'm actually loving Apple News.
Are you?
On my iPad mini. It's the best. It's this tiny little, you know, magazine thing that I hold in my hand every morning. And I just read through a bunch of things all the time. I love this. I love it so much.
Better than Flipboard? Better than Google News? Better than any of the competition?
I've been using the other competition all along. And since News Plus came out, I've just kind of, I've hyper-focused myself into the news app instead of kind of, I would kind of jump from one to the other to the other. And I love the magazines is the key. That's what I'm just digesting, all of these long form stories that I can go to the internet to read a lot of news related stuff, but these in-depth features and profiles and things like that, that's where I'm just really getting just all that information that I can't just easily get by scrolling through Google News or something like that. So, yeah, I'm really loving it.
Philip?
I've worked too long in the magazine industry. I love long-form journalism, but I'm kind of burned out on it. And, when you see 300 magazines all at once, it's so daunting. It's like having a year's worth of New Yorkers stacked up that you haven't read. But it is, I've shown it to people and their jaws drop. It's incredible access to a lot of great stuff.
I think you're not supposed – this is kind of what Apple did to the record album with a 99-cent single. You're not supposed to think of it as a bunch of magazines. You're supposed to look at the curated front page, and you just get some, articles. It doesn't even matter what magazine, and you might pick those individual ones, right?
Are you talking about News or News Plus?
News Plus. I think it's disaggregating magazines, not the other way around.
Well, yeah, you can see the whole list if you want.
Go ahead, Dan.
Well, I am a fan of News Plus, and will spend money on it. But I'm concerned, at least I'm a little worried about the potential for commodification, especially when I scroll through there and I see blue chip brands right next to thousands, or well, in this case, dozens of other brands that I've never heard of.
Yeah.
And, you know, putting magazines that have a lot of not just time and energy, but money sunk into them right next to stuff that doesn't is concerning.
All right. I have two complaints. One is a longstanding complaint with Apple News in general, and they're not the only ones. But for some reason, and I think it's a production error, all the headlines are truncated. And it just drives me nuts because opinion, $500,000 a year yet struggling, .. Hot Costco dad charms the internet after he .. Let me go to some magazine stories. I guess the magazine headlines are quite as long, but nevertheless, can the U.S. afford Democrats' bold purr? I guess I could figure that one out. Boozy recipes that require a whole bot.
Hey, Leo,
this is to me a production flaw, and they've never fixed this. Drives me nuts.
Do you have it enlarged for old guys with bad eyes?
Maybe that's my problem. Do you not get this?
I don't. No.
On mine, most of the time, it shows the full
okay, the so full that's headline. My fault. All right.
But yeah. What you're saying is actually, it's a design flaw that just because you've increased the font so that you can see it better,
yeah,
I think that it's important for us to be able to digest the information the way the way it was originally intended to be digested. So the fact that it truncates the headline, it can be very frustrating. I think on the iPad,
I had it all the way up. So you're saying turn it to the middle. Where do you have your setting? You're an old guy, Philip.
I know, but I wear glasses. So
where do you have your setting in the middle? Let me look at it now. See, cause that was that. Yeah, so you're right. All right, I take it back. I can't read them, but their headlines are all there. Okay, so
I have two complaints about Apple News.
Let me finish because I do have one other.
All right.
And by the way, Costco dad still truncated, but just a little bit less. Hot Costco dad charms the internet after he's astounded by a successful shopping tea. Don't know what it is. The problem is if I click on this, Apple News is going to take that as a signal that I like this story. And it's going to give me more crap that I don't want to read. So I can't even find out what the headline reads. But the real complaint I have is that it's a walled garden. There is no way to share into or out of this without sending a link to Apple News, which is not very helpful.
Yeah.
Is that just me? Am I doing that wrong also? But I feel like if I use Flipboard, I can share a link to the actual article. If I use the web, I can easily share a link to the actual article. I use Pinboard. That's how we do our news gathering here. You know, I come from the old school radio days where you'd clip out pieces, you know, pieces from the newspaper, and you put them in a folder and bring them to the show. I still do that digitally, but I can't do it with Apple News, so it's a non-starter. I would use a newsreader rather than this.
Mm-hmm. Here are my complaints. That they do a pretty good job of showing us the New York Times and Reuters and the Washington Post and the top stuff. And then you get to trending stories, and it's the number one is almost always Fox News with some variation of headless corpse found in topless bar. The current one.
I blocked one. Fox News. I am going to admit that. I blocked it. And People Magazine. You can block sources.
Oh, well, I'm going to do that because right now it's Prince Charles warned Meghan Markle to avoid wearing tiara as Kate Middleton rocked a diamond headpiece.
Yeah, see, and if you read that, then you're going to get a lot more.
Yeah.
I don't like algorithmic news gathering. I kind of want to see it all. I think one of the things I like about Google News, it's not nearly as polished. It's actually pretty ugly. But it doesn't do that. It surfaces on the front page your top five stories. But if you go deeper, they said specifically, we try not to do it algorithmically. We give you all the different possible sources on that. I'm going back to RSS.
My other complaint with the magazines in News Plus, I may be wrong about this, but I couldn't find a back issue. You get that week's issue or that month's issue.
Oh, that's not good.
Renee had the same problem. I've been able to access back up to a year's worth of content. I think some of it depends on the magazine that you're looking at, because everything that I've looked at gives me all the way back to March of 2018.
Texture.
So I'm not sure why.
Texture, which is based on, used to give you back issues.
Yeah, I'm not sure why some people aren't able to access back issues of stuff, but that's not what everyone sees. For some reason, you're seeing.
So here's National Geographic, April, March, February, January. Looks like I can go pretty far back. Not as far back as in my grandma's basement, but I can go back to a year.
March, I'm looking at time.
March 2019.
I can't seem to do that.
Oh, let me look at time.
Do you have the OAC cover of Time there?
Let me find Time.
It may be that they made deals with individual magazines that are different. Whoa, you have a different cover than I do. Oh, I see. Okay, here's the new one. All right.
So then you click the periodical.
Yeah, you have to tap into the period. The
and then
name
now
of
I can go back to time. Yeah. There's the AOC cover, but going farther back than that.
Which is, honestly, that's a pretty... It's a pretty revealing thing that it's not as usual user friendly. It's not intuitive, which I think that will get better. Apple's gonna, make this work a little bit better for us. But there's been quite a few people who would say things like, I don't know where to find. How do I favorite a magazine? Or just like what you're saying, how do I find back issues? It's not intuitive right now, and the app definitely needs a lot of work to make those things more friendly for us as readers and users, which I think Apple will definitely work on throughout the months. They're going to figure out what works and what doesn't work and change that accordingly.
As best I can tell, News Plus is really just a reskinned texture. And I think you'll, for instance, one of the things I really liked when they showed it off was, at least in some periodicals, you're going to get a kind of Apple News layout. In others, you're just going to get the old PDF layout. And I guess who was it that did Vitici did a Federico Vitici?
He looked at every single one of them,
and about half of them have the new Apple News production, and half of them don't. So right now, so if time, I can scroll the magazine cover up. By the way, they showed all the motion covers. I don't find very many of them. You can scroll the cover up and see a simple table of contents, or scroll it left. Oh, maybe I can't do that. I could do it on the iPad. And I was getting the PDF version of the magazine, which is basically a, let me see. It does that here with PC World. Basically a scan of the magazine, So I don't know.
Leo, before we move on out of this, and this is not going to make you any happier, but you can send a link or share a link outside of Apple News. You just have to make an extra step by tapping into show in Safari.
Oh, you have to open Safari and then you can share.
Right. I know that's still just it's not what it should be and what you would want it to be, but it's there. It's just not as convenient.
No, I knew that there was an open in Safari. And of course, once you're in Safari, you're in the real world again. I think really what I'm saying is it's a walled garden. And Apple really is, to me, this is damaging to the web. I made this argument, you were there, Laurie, on Tuesday, that this kind of walled garden of content is damaging to an free and open web. I don't know. Maybe, again, I'm just an old timer.
No, I think you're right. And the difference between this and Tapestry, maybe it's just a reskin Tapestry with two new newspapers, but it's in a billion pockets, y'all.
That's right. And obviously that's what the magazines thought when they, said, all right, we'll stay. Wall Street Journal is there in some oddly limited form, although there's some debate over how much of the journal you get. But the New York Times and the Washington Post are not. They're there as the regular news, but not part of News Plus. And LA Times is, which is interesting. I think it's an opportunity. I think this is what you're going to see is LA Times says, well, we would like to be seen as a national newspaper. Maybe this is a way to get that kind of national profile
smart.
On Apple News. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's smart for them.
Yeah, I hope the San Francisco Chronicle does something like that. That would be great if they could be participants in the national news cycle like that.
I think Andy Anako made a very good point, which is that local papers are less enticed to be part of this because they give up so much. Not merely revenue, but customer information, that it just doesn't make sense for them, because they're local, to be in a national play like News Plus.
You know what, though? If there were more national news organizations that participated in the news app or in News Plus, I think we might be more inclined to spend money on those digital subscriptions for our local newspapers. Like the Sacramento Bee has a paywall after you hit your five articles.
Paywalls. Paywalls are not a good solution, are they?
No, well, they're trying to figure out a way to make money in this new digital world. So there's going to be a lot of hits and misses and a lot of kind of experiments with how to make money off of this stuff. Right. But if I'm only paying $10 a month for a bunch of international news or national news organizations, I'm going to be much more inclined to spend that extra $10 a month for my local Sacramento Bee, let's say, or whatever your local organization is, just because you feel, well, this is my community and I want to read more about my community, but I also want to continue to learn about everything that's going on in the rest of the country. So it could be good. It could help sort of level the playing field and kind of provide more opportunities for organizations to grow. It's possible.
Dan, you know, the Facebook tried to, kind of position itself as the benefactor and savior of publishers. Clearly that was a double-edged sword and did not work out. Is this good for news? Is this good for journalism?
I don't know. I think we will find out in the future. Like I said earlier, my concern is that this could commodify news. We've seen that happen in the past with Facebook and other outlets. It could be good. I don't know that I'd be more inclined to spend money on local news if more national news outlets were included in Apple News. But I do like the idea of elevating the profile of outlets like the LA Times and maybe the San Francisco Chronicle and others. Yeah. I don't know. I'm very conflicted. I don't know if I'll continue to spend money on Apple News, but every month a significant portion of my media diet and my budget goes to supporting news because it's incredibly important now more than ever that we vote with our pockets and say, hey, look, news, local and national, is incredibly important. Vetted news, reported news.
Yeah. I think we can defer discussion of Apple Arcade and Apple TV Plus till they actually appear. Because there's a lot of question marks, a lot of things we don't know. I think the only thing I might say about Apple TV Plus is while they've got all those people on those dioceses and on those pedestals, and it's pretty impressive, I think there's a lot of question about whether creatives are going to want to go there, given Apple's apparent interest in making it a family platform. You're not going to see a Breaking Bad there. You're not going to see True Blood there. You're not going to see a Sopranos there. You're going to see wholesome entertainment.
Right. And there have been reports that the reason there's nothing to show yet is because Tim Cook and Eddie Q have been someone has been intrusive and telling people what they can and can't do. And, HBO is smart. They hire really good people and they say, okay, you're on your own. Right. We're not going to interfere.
Right.
And that's what Hollywood guys want to hear.
Absolutely. Creatives celebrate HBO for that reason. I don't know if the new Time Warner will be the same. In fact, I think HBO is going to...
Things might be different at HBO soon.
Yeah, I think it's about to change, which would be sad. But goodness knows, creatives have many places to go. Just because Apple's waving a checkbook doesn't mean Amazon and Netflix aren't. And I think ultimately creatives are going to choose the place where they can create their vision as best as they can. Couple more Apple items, then we'll get off this. This is not supposed to be the Apple show. AirPower is dead.
Yeah. Wasn't that crazy?
Wow.
I was actually in the middle of at the end of the iMore podcast show. We were winding down and we had been making jokes about, will Apple launch AirPower while we're in the middle of our podcast. So I had Twitter up just in case, there was a sudden announcement while we were talking and we were saying our goodbyes, and sure enough that TechCrunch article popped up and we're all just like, ah ha ha, and I said, Wait. And then we were just stunned. The three of us just kind of sat there almost not talking for a second. Like, what just happened?
Let's face it. This is not a major product. Apple did announce it 2 years ago with the iPhone X. In fact, when they announced it, there were no AirPod wireless charging cases. So we knew they'd have to do that too. They did do that. In fact, people are starting to get their new AirPod 2s already. But apparently it was difficult to make the AirPower. iFixit had an article that guessed that the problem would be FCC approval because Apple, you know, most Qi chargers, wireless chargers, have one or two coils. Those coils are matched to a coil in the device and charge the device via inductance. But Apple's AirPower wanted to have many coils, up to 32, so that you could put the phone anywhere, any position or device on the pad would work. Problem with that, according to engineers, is when you have multiple coils, they interact, you get standing waves, and suddenly you get a lot of radio noise coming out of these things. And so iFixit is guessing that the problem was you can get bad enough that it can stop somebody's pacemaker or short circuit a hearing aid. So iFixit is guessing that FCC approval. Apple was supposedly manufacturing these. They were already in manufacture, but getting FCC approval might have been the
right. So, yeah. So if you take iFixit's article at its word, which really does make a lot of sense, then this idea that Apple, they failed to make it, that's wrong. They actually did
they
make
made it.
It's just that it's dangerous. So
it could kill you like, but it works.
Right. According to Gruber, who heard from his little birdies 6 months ago, there was a heated debate within the Apple engineering community, and half of them said they looked at it and they said it ain't going to work, and they're very smug right now because they were right.
One where I'm not going to hit Apple for this one at all because they tried something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they didn't ship a bad product.
And they didn't ship something that didn't work or killed people. Two thumbs up on that.
Good on them.
Maybe they shouldn't have announced it 2 years ago. This is something I don't know that I've been noticing a lot in the tech community. I raised this with on Windows Weekly. A lot of vaporware is back, baby. Google Stadia. I mean, not till the end of the year. Apple announced two products that won't be out till the end of the year. Another product won't be out till the summer.
Google's known for announcing things and then never following.
Yeah, Google, you expect that. But Apple's been pretty disciplined about not announcing stuff. The iPhone, they announced the first iPhone in January, and it shipped in June, but that's because they had to get FCC approval and they didn't want anybody to know about it. I understand that. Typically, though, Apple is pretty good about this. Mm-hmm. Why did they announce it so soon? So early?
Yeah, especially that is something that seems really strange about that. If they weren't 100% sure that this was going to happen, they could have just kept it to themselves.
There's no need to announce this at all. Mm-hmm.
Especially when if they would have eventually let's say instead of it being canceled, they announced it and it launched on Friday. At this point, there's been so much hubbub about whether or not it will happen that a lot of people would have been disappointed in it anyway. That
no matter what.
It's just another charging pad. Right. And sure, it would have had great features, but because Apple took nearly 2 years to put it out, everybody would have just kind of been like, well, who cares now? So, you know, announcing it 2 years before it was going to be available, if it, you know, in a different universe, it did become available. It really was kind of odd that they wanted to get everybody excited about this charging pad that they were making and then just not do it instead of keeping it secret.
Established that they were serious about wireless charging. So serious.
I wonder.
About
yeah. chargers.
I think that's it.
Yeah. They announced it at the same time they took away the earphone plug.
Yep.
So, so they had to come up with an alternative solution to that plug.
And that was AirPods.
Because you lost your ability to both power and listen to music at the same time.
Right.
Yeah. But you know, I think the other thing that might have happened is in the 2 years or the year and a half that we were waiting for it, all these cheap discs came out and the field has become commodified. And one thing we know about Apple is that they don't like to put out products that they don't make a lot of money on.
Apple went wireless, there were a lot of wireless chargers.
Right. Yeah.
They were the last to the market with a wireless charging. Yeah. So I don't know if that's changed dramatically. But Philip, you've been around. You remember the early days of the computing industry where vaporware was very common.
Sure. And you did it for a couple of reasons. One was to chase people out of the market. You know, let them know that you're going to come out with a killer product and it's going to come out in 6 months. And it just kills the competition if you're the right kind of company. It's the kind of thing Dell tried to do. Well, the famous one was Osborne Computer. You probably go back long.
He Osborned himself. Yeah, it became the term. That's what you say. Right? They were Osborned. Adam Osborne was selling a computer I wanted. Everybody was drooling over because it was so affordable at $2,000 and so light at 32 pounds. And had a screen that was literally this big, but you wanted it because it came with all that software. And then he said, and by the way, in 6 months, the Osborne 2 will be out. And sales just disappeared. And the company literally went bankrupt. They went out of business.
That was the end of it.
Yep. He was a nice, I liked Adam, but his name lives on, unfortunately, as a cautionary tale.
Theranos.
Have you watched the Theranos documentary yet, Dan?
I have, and I read the book, but I read Kerry Rue's reporting when it was coming out.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I haven't read Kerry Rue's book. We had him on Triangulation. My wife's reading it. She says she won't watch the documentary because she says, I don't know what happens. Don't tell me. I said,
It's Alex Gibney did the documentary.
Yeah.
He's the same guy. He's a famous.
Super Size Me. Yeah.
No, he did the Scientology documentary.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So but what this documentary does is show how the process of vaporware or taking the tech approach to problem solving has become a streamlined component of the industry.
It's a really good, I thought, documentary. It's called The Inventor. It's really about not just really Theranos, but Elizabeth Holmes and who she is and what happened there. And while it doesn't answer any questions, it's still fascinating.
Yeah, it
she
is about
blink.
How we've. That's true.
She doesn't.
But how
blink.
The tech industry has a particular approach to problem solving, and that it might be permissive of vaporware, and in this case, vaporware on the scale that could harm human beings. But I mean, we see this process through the entire industry.
Yes. Well, Lyft just had a fantastic IPO. And is now valued at $22 billion, even though it's never made any money. It's a big money loser, as is Uber. And in both cases, it's not clear how they could ever make money. And yet the stock market has embraced these companies. This is Silicon Valley writ large. Lose money for years to build a customer base and figure you'll make it up in volume.
Yeah, that's... Yeah. I mean, that's what Amazon was, you know. Amazon kind of was the...
Yeah, but they did it.
It showed every... Yeah, exactly. They showed everybody that it can be done, which is why I think these companies are valued so high, is that it can be done. And so if you project into the future what your current user base is, then you can kind of look at that and say, yeah, they're going to make a lot of money at some point. We just got to figure out how.
I looked at that Lyft thing, wondering, is there a buying opportunity? Should we be buying Lyft? And what, it went up 23% in a couple of hours. And the next day I looked at who was made a billionaire, who made $1 billion plus on that IPO. And there were five companies or five individuals, and I think there were investors who made more than $1 billion. That's the smart money. They got their money, and then with the IPO, they're going to sell it to the dumb money.
Everybody knows that the best way to profit from a pyramid scheme is to get in early. Yeah. I'm not saying this is a pyramid scheme by any means, but yeah, was it all VC firms that made the big bucks
off
of it?
Yeah, yeah.
Not the drivers. Well, congratulations. You have to wonder, though, why people are buying the stock when there's such challenges in the future of ride sharing. Are they betting on autonomous vehicles becoming commonplace?
I think they're betting on the gig economy is what they're calling it. And there's a whole bunch of gig economies about the IPO, right? I had a list and now I don't know what I did with it. I mean, Uber's coming up.
Well, there's a bunch of them. Pinterest, I think, is coming up, right?
Yeah.
Spotify, did that already happen? Yeah, I think it did. So, but these are, it's funny. It's, I feel like we're going back in time. And worse, we're going back in time and haven't learned the lessons of the previous iteration. Maybe that's just the way life is. And when you get older, you start to notice it. I don't know.
Does it feel like the dot-com bust to you? Is that what you're saying?
I wouldn't say that only because this has been a 10-year bull market. And against all sense, it seems to be continuing. I don't know.
It's above my pay scale. I don't know
where
the economy's headed.
Yeah. Finally, one last Apple story. Then I'm not going to mention the word Apple again. But you have to have loved Joanna Stern's fantastic piece in the Wall Street Journal. Apple still hasn't fixed its MacBook keyboard problem. And, of course, notice the problem is apparent in the headline in the article. But even better, she's put switches in.
That was so
great. Read with the E's on or off. Read with the R's on or off, because I guess her keyboard's malfunctioning. Oh, maybe you'd like to read it with double E's, another problem people are having. My wife has a double space bar on her MacBook. How about double T's? You can have double E's and double T's and and on and on and on. Apple, I should turn all these off so I can read the damn thing. Read with E's and R's, but do not read with double E's and double T's. Whew. Apple told her, because it's Joanna Stern writing in the Wall Street Journal, we're aware that a small number of users are having issues with their third generation butterfly keyboard, and for that, we are sorry. The vast majority of Mac notebook customers are having a positive experience with the keyboard. That's it.
Yeah.
No
she
admission.
Made a movie. She made a movie after that, a little video where she actually puts on butterfly wings and little butterfly antenna above her head.
I love Joanna Stern. She used to be a regular on this show, but now she's too big time for us. But I think she's just great. We love you, Joanna. Yeah. If you ever want to come back on Twit, it's okay. We would welcome you back. They're doing a great production job on the Wall Street Journal. She's a worthy successor to Walt Mossberg. Let's put it that way. Does Apple have a problem with these keyboards?
Yeah. I think when the MacBook Pro with butterfly keyboard first came out in 2016, I think it immediately there were problems. And I get that it's a small portion of people, but there were enough people that it should have been recognized immediately and something should have been done about it. And then, sure, they put out the third generation butterfly keyboard, which had the little membrane that helped protect from dust and dirt getting in, so it was supposed to improve it. But there, for Apple to be so dismissive about so many people, and again, obviously they've got their numbers and it's a small portion of people, but it's a large enough portion of people. I have it. My MacBook Pro has double T's and double I's.
Really?
So there's 2 out of 4 of us. That's 50% of us that have problems with our MacBook
Pro. If you include my
Pro.
Wife, it's 3.
Yeah, so it's big. It's big enough that there should be something done about it. And there's certainly, like Joanna was saying, there's a point at which they keep putting out more MacBooks with this keyboard, even though they know that there's a lot of us that are having problem with it. They're not just throwing it away and starting from scratch. They're trying to incrementally fix it, but it's still a problem. And at some point, nobody's going to want to get a MacBook Pro or a MacBook or a MacBook Air because they're too worried about whether or not they're going to have a keyboard that's got some kind of fault to it. So it should be fixed.
They really have lowered the quality of the MacBook Air. My pet peeve is the MagSafe, which was a really nice innovation. And they have all these excuses for why they got rid of it. But the fact is it now takes two hands to push in the plug, whereas you used to be able to just snap it in, and it's, the risk of tripping over it is increased. It's a cheaper computer. It's got a cheaper keys. It's got a cheaper power plug, and it costs more.
Well, here's good news. The Mac Pro is just around the corner, and you can choose your own keyboard and still spend a lot of money. So,
unless they cancel that.
How much to make a mechanical keyboard?
I it broke my heart. I bought the i9 MacBook Pro with a touch bar. I hate the touch bar. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
Don't send me emails saying, oh, you should try a better touch tool. That makes it somewhat more usable, but it's still a goofy waste of space. I never had any problems with the keyboard, but I never liked using it. So I gave it to my son, and I'm buying a ThinkPad. As much as I prefer Mac OS, Windows 10 isn't that bad, and at least the keyboard works well. It's fun.
And what you're saying is exactly what a lot of consumers are going to be going through. Yeah. If they haven't already, there's now three different types of laptops from Mac across 3 years that have experienced
problems.
Yeah, keyboard
and they
problems.
Fixed it.
So there's going to be a lot of people who are going to say, well, I could get a Mac laptop or I could get a Windows laptop that doesn't have a messed up keyboard.
Somebody in the chat room said, why are you picking on Apple today? I'm not.
We're about to pick on someone else.
Yeah, let's go pick on somebody else. Thank you, Philip. Philip Elmer DeWitt is an Apple guy. His whole website, PED30, is an Apple-focused news site and a great one, PED30.com.
It's pitched to investors. It's pitched to Apple investors.
Well, this picture on the front page is not going to help you, I have to say.
Which one is that? Did you see I included a map, a locator, just for you?
A map?
Scroll down.
A map?
Yeah, scroll down.
Okay.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Click on that first
article. Click on
article.
The article?
Yeah, read more. Read
How
more.
How to find so, Twit. It's... Oh!
Because you kept saying that you thought I lived in Connecticut, so I've provided a map. You see the Levi blue corner?
This is
in the
an
upper
awesome
left-hand?
Map. I love this map. This is fantastic.
I live
so where do you live? Party. Leafy Loaded and Liberal or Irish no, Riviera?
No, I grew up with Leafy Liberal and Loaded, but now I live in Hippie Farmers, just to the right of Cultured Hill Folk and above Elizabeth
students.
Warren and the hippie students. Yeah,
I grew up in people who talk weirder and drive worse than us, so I think I know a little bit about vacation and lobsters.
Yeah.
This is great.
Yeah, it's a great map.
Where's this from?
I don't know. I actually posted it 3 years ago when I for you on this show.
I love it. I'm sending it to my mom because she also lives in people who talk weirder and drive worse than us.
Beaches and killer flies.
Rotaries and traffic jams. That's Boston for you.
Yeah. Oh, White Florida.
Man. Wham beaches. Gillette Stadium. Milltowns and methadone. Oh Lord, this is very
middle of the the middle of the state is there be dragons here.
Yeah. Western Massachusetts is beautiful. My grandmother had a house there where the Cultured Hill Folk live. Let's take a little time out. Also with us at the wonderful Lori Gill. She is managing editor at iMore, and I am always happy to have you on the show. And the great Dan Patterson from CBS Interactive, senior producer at CNET Embedded, explaining how this stuff works to CBS News. You've done such great coverage in the past. Are you going to get to do some election coverage this cycle? Because your election coverage is great.
Well, that's nice of you to say. In 2016, Tech Republic, which is also part of CBSI, we covered not the horse race, not the politics of who's up and who's down, but the big data.
Yeah.
And what we discovered was this company called Cambridge Analytica.
Yeah.
That was helping
the
Cruz campaign.
Yeah.
And I had these weird exchanges with this guy named Alexander Nix. In fact, they invited me to their holiday party and New York City opening party for their office. Yeah. In fact, one of their PR people, who was a former flag for them, just emailed me his experience working with them. But I knew them when they were on the Cruz campaign, and somebody said, hey, you should pay attention to this company. There's a little something fishy going on here.
Wow.
And we've been covering the data involved with politics for a long time now. We'll continue to do that through 2020. Again, not the partisan horse race, but but the big data and the technology, we're calling it election tech. It'll be on CBS News and CNET for the next 18 months or so.
By the way, Philip, I was going back to look at previous articles featuring this map. And in 2016, you're on Twit, and the headline was, Apple is doomed. So, la plus ça change, la plus la même chose. I guess I'm just a broken record. I'm sorry. I love Apple. I really do. I'm wearing an Apple Watch. I have an iPhone. I'm using a Surface Studio. Oh, wait a minute. Actually, this would make an excellent iPad. If anybody would just make a 30-inch iPad, I'd buy that. Our show today brought to you by a fabulous My Mattress, Casper, the sleep brand that continues to change the mattress world. They were the first to realize that there was this huge inequity in mattress buying. The mattress manufacturer would make it, then sell it to a middleman, a mattress store, where they would inflate the price by more than doubling it, and all for the privilege of lying on that mattress for 5 minutes in front of a salesperson looking at you funny and decide, because you need to lie on that mattress before you buy it. Now, perhaps that's true, but wouldn't it be better to buy direct from the manufacturer at a fraction of the cost and then have 100 nights to sleep on the mattress before deciding? That's the Casper revolution. They're cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms, passing that savings on to you, and they know that you want to try before you buy, so you get free delivery and painless returns within a 100-day period. You don't have to lie down in a showroom ever again. My goodness, these are nice mattresses. I love our Caspers. We had the original Casper mattress, which combined multiple supportive memory foams for this kind of wild sleep surface with, but it has both just the right sink and the right bounce. It's both soft and firm at the same time, and it's breathable, so you sleep cool and regulate your temperature throughout the night. As you can see in the video, it comes in a very compact box. That's a queen size. This is our guest room. I just love these mattresses. Look at this. And unlike any mattress I bought before, there's no time to air them out. They smell fresh as a daisy from the moment you open the box. And are they comfy? You will love your Casper mattress. Buy it easily online, completely risk-free, long-lasting comfort and support. We've had ours for several years now. In fact, we've bought many more. I got one for my son when he went to college. And it was so affordable after 4 years. I said, you can leave it there. We'll get you a new one when you move into your apartment. Casper knows that you want mattresses made in the U.S. to the highest environmental production standards. That's what you get. Free shipping and returns to the U.S. and Canada. Get a Casper mattress today. And by the way, you'll save $50 towards select mattresses if you go to casper.com/twit and use the promo code TWIT at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. Please use that special URL on the promo code. That way they know you heard it here. casper.com/twit. Use the promo code TWIT to save $50. I love this story. It really isn't a big news story, but I still love it. A man in Lithuania, Evaldis Rimasaukas, pled guilty to U.S. wire fraud, aggravated identity theft, and money laundering charges. He had stolen $122 million from Facebook and Google between 2013 and 2015. How? Sending him a bill. He sent him a bill, and they paid it. That's it.
It's kind of genius. Just, you know what? I'm just going to say I'm this company and I'm just going to send you a bill and we'll see what happens.
It's just he returned $50 million, but $73 million are still missing. They said he was a prolific and baroque money launderer.
Well,
someone else I know is a baroque money launderer.
And prolific too. Did you see the article about Trump's cheating at golf? Oh my God. I don't play golf, but oh my God. Anyway, this guy's a punter compared to that. Squirreled cash away in Cyprus, Lithuania, Hungary, Slovakia, and Latvia. Google says we recouped the funds. We're pleased this matter is resolved. He's facing up to 30 years in prison. So it didn't work.
If I recall, he he faked that he was an existing company, right?
He said he was Quanta or something. Quanta Computer, which is a name you know. It's a very well-known Taiwanese manufacturing company. It turned out they didn't have a registered trademark in Latvia. So he registered a company with the name Quanta Computer Incorporated in Latvia, sent bills. Apparently, nobody matched up the POs and the bills. And the accounting department just said, it must be Quanta. We know that name. And they sent him checks.
What I wonder is if he had made up a name of a company and did the exact same thing, and Facebook and Google just paid the bills because they have so many bills to pay, they weren't paying attention. Maybe would he have just not even been in trouble for that? Because he didn't lie.
No, he got in trouble. I think you can't just send
it. It's fraud.
I think it's fraud anyway. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. Why don't you try it, Lori, and see? Just send a sick burn bill to Google, Facebook, and see what happens.
See what happens, right?
Do I pay it? That doesn't seem like that should be illegal.
It's
like
incorporated.
Yeah. Just for services rendered.
Yeah. You know, if a company's big enough and they're not paying attention, maybe they'll just pay those bills and not even notice.
We're not advocating this. I'm just saying.
Definitely not. Definitely not. I just thought what I thought was so interesting was how he so easily managed to steal so much money.
Yeah.
And I think partly because there were just people on the other end, on the accounting end, that were just writing the checks and not. You know, kind of like putting those together for however long. Was it 2 years? Is that what it was?
Yeah.
That's a long time, too.
$122 million.
That's a lot of money. I caught someone hacking my mom's checking account. And I noticed when they took out $9,000 in one day. So I went back. I went to the bank, and she said, "Oh, you better sit down because this went on a lot longer than this." And we traced it back to 6 months ago. Someone started making PayPal deposits, little PayPal, 47 cents, 32 cents, which I didn't notice because I do that kind of thing all the time when I'm trying to transfer to a new bank, and they send a couple of checks, and they waited and waited, and they started just taking money out. I got it all back, but it's a reminder that you really got to check your credit card statements and look for those little PayPal deposits.
Yeah, because that's how they verify the account.
Yeah, right? they're testing it to see, is there a real account here? We'll deposit some money and take the same amount of money out. And if that works, then they'll step it up.
So, Dan Patterson, I figure of all the people, you've got connections.
I don't know about that.
Do you know Gavin De Becker? Do you know of Gavin De Becker? And what do you know of Gavin De Becker?
I do not know Gavin De Becker.
So this is the guy. He's been around for a long time. He's writing in the Daily Beast. He is Jeff Bezos's security guy. Mm-hmm. For 40 years, I've advised at-risk public figures and government agencies on high-stakes security matters. My career has included working with the CIA, FBI at the Reagan White House, counseling foreign leaders, advising on controversial murder cases. He's the guy who Bezos brought in when AMI, the publishers of the National Enquirer, started publishing texts from Bezos to his girlfriend, sexts, I should say. AMI, by the way, this is an opinion piece, but so we're going to have to consider it break it down. AMI, the National Enquirer publishers, were very quick to tell De Becker, in not quite in so many words, but implied to De Becker, that they got the texts from Bezos's girlfriend, Lauren Sanchez's estranged brother. Who didn't like Bezos. And De Becker says, AMI practically pinned a kick me sign on Michael Sanchez. Oh, this is the guy. But De Becker's dug a little deeper, and Bezos now believes, and De Becker confirms, that in fact it was Saudi Arabia that sold this information to AMI. And that fact, Saudi Arabia, Bezos says, has been inside his phone and bugging him for a long time. Now, I guess, you know, I mean, I don't know why anybody would make that up. I think DeBecker, I don't know how credible DeBecker is. I've heard his name for a long, long time.
He's considered a very serious private eye.
Yeah.
You know, he's not lying about his record. I thought that the distinction was between the texts that the brother may have had access to, because I don't know. But then how did someone get a hold of the pictures that are in the iPhones? And that's not something.
That's a nation state. That's a nation state.
Is that confirmed that it was an iPhone? They never mentioned the phone model.
Well, it wasn't a Fire phone, I can promise you that. Maybe it was.
I've seen references to an iPhone, but but they weren't. It wasn't the guy himself saying it, so I don't know for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The key there is what you said, Leo, that it was a nation state or allegedly a nation state actor. And whether these allegations are true or not, we do know that Saudi Arabia has played an increasing role in Silicon Valley, and we know that nation states are often threat actors, and that the targets are often asynchronous, at least in terms of their ability to counter these strikes. We see the rise of Iran as well. Israel, for sure, is a powerful nation state actor. China and Russia are all acting on the national or international stage, and their targets can be anyone ranging from Bezos to other large nation states or other large companies. Global cyber war is simply a fact of life now.
DeBecker says he's handed over the evidence to law enforcement. He said, this is my last public statement on the matter. He says, we're not clear to what degree, if any, AMI was aware of what was going on. But it was interesting that they so quickly threw Sanchez under the bus. And, of course, you may remember, the New York Times said that the Saudis had a embedded spy, I guess, inside Twitter. Twitter fired that person. That, you know, the Saudis have targeted Bezos has already been reported by CNN and Bloomberg and the Daily Beast, so this is not new. In fact, there have been public calls for boycotts against Amazon and its Saudi subsidiary, Souq.com. It's interesting. I don't know what to say about it. I bring it up only because I think we're going to hear more and more stories of nation states getting involved in politics.
Yeah, the motivation here would have been that the Washington Post has been going after the murder of Khashoggi.
That's right. Full Khashoggi blast. Worked for the Washington Post.
Yes. Yeah.
So, and Bezos owns it, so that he would be the target.
Yeah. Thank you for connecting those dots for us. Speaking of hacking, Asus is being accused of having its updater used to embed malware on Asus computers. This first came from Kaspersky Labs, the Russian security researcher, later confirmed for Motherboard by, I think, Symantec. The story is kind of interesting because even though thousands of computers, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of computers, Asus computers, had this malware installed, signed certificate from Asus using the Asus updater, but only 600 machines was it activated. And it was activated, if you look at the malware, it was activated by MAC address. So the perpetrators of this, and I don't think it was Asus, I think it's much more likely that Asus had an advanced persistent threat, a hacker inside their network that was able to sneak this into a payload of an update, which is why Asus signed it and pushed it. But where did they get the MAC addresses? And why were those MAC addresses particularly chosen? I think is very interesting. I think this is pretty clearly another nation state. And I proposed when Steve Gibson talked about this on Security Now, an example scenario. Let's say North Korea learned that the Korean embassy in Washington had just taken an order of 600 Asus computers, it wouldn't be too hard to figure out what those MAC addresses are and then try to infect them to put malware on there. Or the Israeli government took 600 Asus computers, and the Saudis, perhaps. There, you could think of a lot of scenarios where you would spread malware everywhere with the aim of merely targeting a handful of machines. Any thoughts about this, or is this just yet another one to put in the folder?
I think that
Go ahead, Gloria, and then Dan.
The fear that comes to me when I read something like this is how dangerous it is that the supply chain is kind of a ground zero for what becomes a future attack. Yes. A lot of times when we hear about viruses or cyber attacks, a lot of us in the tech world, we can say to you, don't freak out. The only way this will happen is if somebody has access to your physical computer and nobody has that access, you're fine. And then when you read something like this, you're kind of like, oh, wait, this could happen in the supply chain that could then eventually affect us in the future, even though nobody's, sneaking into our house and turning on our cameras at night or something like that. This is something that can infect us in our hardware, which could then eventually affect us in our software.
The scariest thing, and I don't really know what to think about it, is the allegation that Huawei, is that how you say it?
Yeah, Huawei.
Huawei, which provides the servers that are the backbone for a lot of countries' internet, that they've got spy chips in there already, and that, that's the reason why the U.S. has banned them, and the rest, they have the Canadians arrest the CFO. I have no idea whether it's possible, and I don't even know how you make sure. How would you test one of these servers to find out if it was spying on, was looking at every piece of traffic that went through it? How would you find out?
Dan, you were going to say something?
Well, I think, to Lori's point in the supply chain, the reason an attack like this exists is to obfuscate the intended target. And, we as consumers might not be as at risk from threat actors performing behaviors like this, but certainly those in government and in contractors of the government are particularly vulnerable. And, scattering this across the supply chain has a potential for a lot of distributed access by what you said there initially, Leo, and APT.
It's interesting because you may remember when CCleaner, which is a very popular, although I think of dubious value, cleanup tool that PC users use, in 2017 was delivering malware to customers via assigned software update. But to connect the dots in a weird way, this is from the Motherboard article, that it may have been the same attackers behind the CCleaner attacks. And it is thought that Asus, this is according to one security researcher, was one of the primary targets of the CCleaner attack. So this is really important to understand how persistent and clever nation-state attackers can be and how long-term their goals can be. If they perpetrated a malware payload in 2017 with the intent of getting into Asus so that they could then later, after sitting on Asus's network for a while and figuring things out, target 600, a mere 600 Asus computers 2 years later. This is a tough thing to beat. This is going to be harder and harder, and we're going to see a lot more about this. Now, there is some question about what is Asus's culpability. If anything, Asus was slow to tell people about this. They were warned about it in January. They took their time. I understand, sometimes it's embarrassing to talk about this stuff. Sometimes you want to research it before you talk about it. They took a long time to tell their customers about it. That's got to change. And that's one thing I like about GDPR is short time frames for revealing breaches and things like that. You can't keep this stuff secret in the EU. We're going to see a lot more of this. And then, of course, when you talk about supply chain, Laurie, that brings up the famous Bloomberg Supermicro story, which has never proven a supply chain attack, a hardware supply chain attack on Supermicro's computers. I think there's, mm-hmm. I always look to you, Dan. I don't know why. It's not like you're a hacker, but I feel like you have your feelers in this community. I feel like this is just known that the supply chain is vulnerable.
Yeah, the supply chain. I mean, it is my community, in as much as it's my beat, yes. Security is. But yes. I mean, the supply chain is vulnerable and will continue to become more vulnerable as it becomes more diverse. And especially as I feel like a broken record every time I talk about the Internet of Things, but this is the next coming hardware thing in edge computing. And as we have millions or billions of more devices come online, and how many of them have a default password of password or admin or are made by some strange vendor somewhere, we can just assume that a certain percentage of the connected device ecosystem, ranging from an IoT device to a mobile device to a computer to who knows what, is going to be vulnerable.
Yeah. Well, just it's a cautionary tale. And if you have an Asus computer, Asus is sending out firmware fixes, patches or something. I'm not sure what, but they are fixing this. And that's a good thing. If you missed any of our programs this week on Twit, you missed nothing, because we have no promo this week. Is that right? You're just going to have to guess. Normally we have a promo. Our show today. I should have asked ahead of time before I started that tease. Our show today brought to you by Hot Wasabi. Wasabi is hot cloud storage. Good to remember, right? Wasabi, that's that green ball on the sushi platter you don't pop in your mouth. But on the other hand, Wasabi is the hot cloud storage alternative you really do want to consider. I know when people are moving to the cloud, of course, and everybody's moving to the cloud in one way or another. In fact, the estimate is that there'll be 163 zettabytes in the cloud by 2025, in the next 5 years. That's 163 followed by 21 zeros. That's a lot of data. There are a lot of companies vying for your data, the big three, of course, but I want you to add a fourth to your shopping list, Wasabi. Wasabi was founded by Jeff Flowers and David Friend, two guys I've known for a long, long time. They founded Carbonite, and the thing that they discovered when they created Carbonite was a revolutionary process that lays data on disks sequentially as opposed to in blocks, how everybody else does it. That results in storage that's 80% cheaper and 600% faster than Amazon's S3. And that means Wasabi can do it better for less for you. Wasabi is going to provide cloud storage that is, in most cases, more secure than your on-premises storage. That's faster. It's very simple. There's just one tier of service. And unlike the other guys, free unlimited egress. So you don't have to budget for, well, how much download are they going to want? No, you don't have to worry about it. And I have to say, it is really secure. HIPAA, FINRA, and CJIS compliant. That's important. And if you want to move a petabyte of data up to the cloud, you can do that with the Wasabi Ball. It's awesome. They send it to your premises. You copy your data over. You send it back. Now you're in the cloud. Wasabi's awesome. I understand you've not heard of them before unless you've been listening to our show, but I want you to at least check them out. WASABI.com. Add them to your shopping list. Check them out. There's one more feature I really love, the ability to say some data is immutable. That's so important. That means no fumble-fingered employee, no ransomware can modify that cloud data. It's immutable. It's safe. Enterprise-grade cloud storage, a fifth the price of traditional vendors, up to six times faster, no hidden fees for egress. Oh, one more thing. The API is the same as Amazon's S3, so you already know how to use it. It's basically plug-compatible with S3 for a lot less. Go to wasabi.com and use the offer code TWIT for a month of unlimited storage just to try it. Copy everything up there. Wasabi.com. Use the offer code TWIT. Or contact sales to find out more about Wasabi. Bring that to your boss. Say, boss, you never heard of them, I know, but this company's 80% cheaper, six times faster. They've got immutable storage. It's S3 compatible. we got to at least try them out. Wasabi.com. Well, I don't know whether to say this is the end of the world as we know it or just the beginning of the end of the world as we know it. I'll let you be the judge. The EU has approved the copyright directive we were all afraid they would approve, including Article 11 and 13, now cast as Article 17, so they might fool you. But a very scary bill. Now, it won't be law. It's a directive, not a law. It won't be law till all of the countries in the EU incorporate it into their own legal code. But that will happen quickly, I think, in some countries like France, who really wanted this. Article 11 is the snippet article. And this is something that was tried both in Spain and Germany with not the best effect. They don't like it that Google publishes snippets of content, they being Axel Springer and the other publishers in the EU, that as Google publishes snippets of their content in search results. They say, knock it off. So that's Article 11. I'm much more worried about Article 13, now 17, because that says that sites like Facebook, Twitter, YouTube have to proactively monitor for copyright violations. Proactively, that means before the content is posted, they have to make sure that the copyright is unencumbered. And honestly, this is very scary to companies like mine, where almost everything we do, including playing those Apple clips, is a comment on copyrighted material. There is no allowance for fair use in the new law. 5 million petitioners, 5 million people signed petitions against it. There were hundreds of thousands of protesters on the streets of Europe last weekend, but it passed. So now what? Am I overly worried?
Well, it's things like this that caused Brexit. I mean, the British felt like decisions were being made in Brussels that they had no control over.
Yeah.
That's what this feels like to us, right?
I mean, the EFF points out that maybe courts will modify or change it. That countries may modify it before they make it their law. One hopes that some sanity will prevail, but there will be at least a few countries, France for one, in the EU that will adopt the most draconian interpretation of this new copyright directive.
When the internet exists, started when the World Wide Web became more publicly available to all of us, I remember thinking, this is the Wild West right now. There's no regulations. You can do what you want. You can start a website with any name. There's nobody out there who's regulating it or owning it and making you license or buy anything. And I knew then, and this was a long time ago, that this would not last. And frankly, it's lasted a lot longer than I thought it would. It's like when broadcasting radio first started, you could just, as long as you had something that could handle a channel, you could make your own radio station. There was nobody telling you that you had to buy or rent or license, you know, WHYZ or something like that. It was just open to everyone. And then regulations started coming into place. People started owning the airwaves. And I think that's what we're seeing now with the internet. This is just one step in that direction.
Are you arguing that this is a good thing?
No, absolutely not. I wish this wasn't happening, but I knew from the beginning that it was never going to be as perfect as what we've had all along. Not that what we have is perfect, but the openness that we've had all along, that I'm not surprised at all that this is a step down that path where we're not going to be able to just buy the domain www.loriisarockstar.com and then, you know, have a blog on it. That's not going to happen anymore.
I already
anymore.
Have that. Sorry.
Yeah, the future of internet is SplinterNet.
SplinterNet. Tell me about that.
Oh, splintered internet, right?
Yeah.
Different regulations for different territories.
Right.
But ultimately, doesn't the lowest common denominator win? I mean...
Well, China is a splintered internet. They block all kind of news, all kinds of
news.
Yeah,
we don't have to block
what
they
block.
But
the rest of the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm kind of surprised that the internet companies I mean, obviously, there's two parties here. There's the internet companies that that like that they get to do it, and then if they do something wrong, they can then correct it. And the copyright holders who say, no, 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 you can't put it up, and if you put it up, you're liable. I'm surprised that the internet companies didn't have enough power politically, financially. They didn't have enough pull to get their way on this.
It does seem that that's the trend in Europe, right? I mean, Google hates this snippet, this as Jeff uses the German term, which I'm not going to attempt. Like Zung Jigschrecht, I did attempt it by mistake. it was kind of a failure in Spain, and it's not been a success in Germany, but it doesn't seem to stop them. And the reason, it's one thing for China to have its own internet. It's another thing, well, for us, for instance, are we going to have to block our podcast from listeners in the EU because we could be liable to prosecution because we comment? Everything we do, every one of these stories, I'm pulling up an article from a newspaper or magazine that we're referring to. That's what we do. That's commentary. Do I have to block the podcast from the EU? I don't want to have to go to jail in the EU. Of course, if it's in France, the food will be pretty good.
Yeah.
No, it's terrible and unfortunate. And I think you were saying the beginning of the end. I think that's very true. It's a step in that direction.
It's the end of innocence, I guess, as you would put it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the end of the wild west of the internet that we've been so lucky to have this whole time. And to me, it was inevitable that it was going to happen. And I, you know, I hoped that, you know, sort of commerce would win out, and that, you know, we could just continue to have it be open because so many companies can easily make a living off of it. You know, being able to make a living off of just talking about news that pops up is amazing and wonderful. And the fact that we're able to do something like that is so incredible and only exists because the internet has been so open, and those doors shuttering is really disappointing. And I think, I don't know. It's very possible that this is just one that we're going to see this happen in more countries if they succeed.
A little closer to home, we've got Elizabeth Warren talking about breaking up Facebook and Google, and you know, you got to say, wait a minute, they've created so much value. You know, that's a, yeah, I don't know, billions, trillions of dollars of value created, and you're going to target it and break it up?
I think, though, that answers your question earlier about why the big boys aren't fighting this as hard as they could. They're already running a rearguard action, aren't they? Mark Zuckerberg in the Washington Post, the internet needs new rules.
Yeah.
This is the last guy you would say expect to be saying, oh, we need more regulation. But I think it's a defensive action. It's like, what do they call that when the firefighters start a burn going in the other direction to keep the town from burning up? It's a backfire. You know, Dan, do you have a thought on the Articles 11 and 17?
Well, I mean, I think we are headed towards a splinter net, and I certainly think with Mr. Zuckerberg's commentary the other day that this is what the entire tech industry in the United States is doing. Is trying to defend itself by getting ahead of itself. You know, we've spoken with Warren's camp, and interestingly, although he's not in the field yet, John Kasich's camp has some fairly sophisticated thoughts about regulation. And so it'll be interesting to see the rhetoric evolve over the next year and a half during the campaign cycle. I don't know that we're going to see federal regulation anytime soon, but I think that we can absolutely expect state regulation, especially from California.
Yeah, we already have
the state of New York.
A very extreme California privacy bill. Passed into law, it won't take effect for a couple of years. But I think what's happening at this point is people like Zucker hoping for a federal regulation, which, as I remember, Ted Cruz, or is it? No, Marco Rubio has already proposed.
Rubio has proposed that. You know, for those of you who would like a fairly good example of what regulation might look like in a form that still allows tech innovation to happen at rapid scale, but protects consumers, I would highly recommend reading Robert McNamee's book, Zucked. It's not just a takedown of Zuckerberg. It's not just a biography of McNamee. It's a really good examination of what consumer privacy regulation might look like and what the posture of consumers might want to have going forward. You know, instead of looking at data as this kind of amorphous and abstract thing that different companies own, thinking about data a lot like your healthcare records. And I think that we could see regulation look similar or take similar shape to what McNamee has proposed.
Yeah, I think I would love to hear. In fact, we should get Roger on our show. I would love to hear what he thinks
fun.
About. Yeah, he's a character. I actually went to school with him.
He is a character.
I would love to know what he thinks about Mark's op-ed on the Washington Post calling for more regulation, because it's really a jujitsu move. I mean, he's basically saying lawmakers often tell me we have too much power. Facebook has too much power over speech. Frankly, I agree. I've come to believe we shouldn't make so many important decisions about speech on our own. So we're creating an independent body so people can appeal our decisions and working with governments, including French officials, on ensuring the effectiveness of content review systems. I think Mark would love to pass the burden on to government. You decide. We don't have to decide.
Didn't Google this week also announce that they were creating some kind of council that was going to advise them? Oh, it was about AI. But it's a similar thing. They're looking for a fig leaf. This council for Google was going to meet once a month, and that would be enough to make sure that AI didn't infringe on.
Thank goodness, that's all it takes. That's awesome. Yeah, that's once a month.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We've been arguing the trolley problem for 25 years and haven't come to a conclusion. I don't know if once a month's going to do it.
What's the trolley problem?
Oh, you know, that self-driving car conundrum where the car, it's been stated in a lot of ways, but essentially the car is forced to make an ethical decision between, let's use the most dramatic case, killing its occupants or running over a grandma and two young children. And what should the car do? And, you know, some say, well, it should always protect the occupants. Yes, but those young children have a life ahead of them, and you're an old man driving the car. We should kill you. That's at least one meeting right there. That's a month shot right there on that subject alone. Let's take one final break, and then we'll run through a bunch of smaller stories to wrap this thing up. Our show today brought to you, where's my Quip? Do I have a Quip here? Oh, I have it at home, my Quip toothbrush. I'm about to go on a vacation to Hawaii, and I will pack the Quip. The Quip electric toothbrush is the first subscription electric toothbrush accepted by the American Dental Association. It was designed to make brushing your teeth easier, more enjoyable, and more affordable. Created by dentists, loved by people, it uses gentle sonic vibrations. Dentists recommend people brush too hard. You don't want a brush that's too hard. This is gentle on sensitive gums. Many electric toothbrushes are too abrasive, bad for your teeth, not the Quip. It's built-in two-minute timer pulses every 30 seconds, so you know when to switch sides. Make sure you clean your whole mouth evenly. 90% of us don't do that. Shocking. I do. I've got the Quip to remind me. And I love the cover, which can either work as a stand or it has a little strip on the back that you could adhere it to your mirror, and then that way, it's I never forget to brush. It's right there staring me in the face. And also declutters. Notice there's no charger. One of the things I love about the Quip, and the reason it's the best travel toothbrush ever, it doesn't have a charger. It has a AAA battery inside. When it dies, you don't charge it. You just get another battery. In fact, I love this. Brush heads are automatically delivered on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5. Friendly reminder, when it's time for a refresh, you put a new head on it. Stay committed to your oral health. Quip is one of the first electric toothbrushes accepted by the ADA. They have thousands of verified 5-star reviews. Add my name to that list. backed by over 20,000 dental professionals. And here's the best part. If you've looked at electric toothbrushes at over $100, Quip starts at just $25. It's so affordable, we actually got an extra Quip with a couple of extra heads for sleepovers. Because you know what? Teenage boys, when they come for sleepovers, I've learned this, never bring a toothbrush, right? Never. Too bad, Aiden. We've got your toothbrush. Your name's on it. Too bad. I love Quip, and you will too. If you go to getquip, getquip.com/twit, your first refill pack is free when you purchase any Quip electric toothbrush. We, Lisa and I have his and hers. She has silver and I have copper, I think, so that we know whose is whose. Get your first refill pack free at getquip.com/twit. Please use that URL so they know you heard it here. Getquip.com/twit. It's the bane of teenage boys everywhere. Actually, they like the Quip toothpaste. Have you used that? It's really tasty. They like that. Amazon is working on a free Fire TV news app. Nothing more to say here. Nothing to see here. Just thought I'd mention it. Actually, this is the hot thing. I saw that, is it McClatchy, Meredith? No, Scripps, advertising heavily for a news app. Is this the hot new freshness? I don't know why. It's very odd. Doesn't seem like
everybody gets their own news app. Is that the idea?
Yeah, you get a news app and you get the Scripps one. I was curious because they advertise it on MSNBC and they say something like, I want to hear from both sides. And I thought, oh, okay, who's this? Who's behind this? But Scripps is pretty, you know, reasonable news operation. So I thought, oh, that's good. Here's one you and I and every tech journalist will celebrate. Chris Capicella, who's chief of marketing at Microsoft, and a good friend of the network, by the way, we have him on every year on Windows Weekly, has sent a memo to all Microsoft employees leaked out to The Verge saying, do not do an April Fool's joke this year. Hi, everyone, Chris writes. It's that time of year when tech companies try to show their creativity with April Fool's Day stunts. Sometimes the outcomes are amusing. Sometimes they're not. Either way, data tells us these stunts have limited positive impact and can actually result in unwanted news cycles. I'm asking all teams at Microsoft not to do any public-facing April Fool's Day stunts. Now I want to see a memo from Sundar Pichai to the Google folks. No April Fool's. It's too late, right? Monday's April Fool's. I bet you Google has 15 pranks already planned.
Wasn't Gmail April Fool's?
Yeah, Gmail last year they had Despicable Me characters in my mail. I don't want that.
I'm against unwanted news cycles. I agree with that.
No, yeah, unwanted exactly. News cycles. But every one of us has to wade through stories. Yeah. Just a reminder, Monday is April Fool's, and you're going to read stuff that's not true. And how many people have gotten bit by reprinting or republishing or talking about? I haven't done it yet.
Yeah. We should all just take tomorrow off. Tomorrow's going to be a personal day. Ugh. Everyone's just going to take it off.
Well, I've got jury duty tomorrow.
You do? Yeah. I hope the judge says, April Fool's, go home, Philip. Wouldn't that be funny? You were talking about Elizabeth Warren, and I think her misguided and obviously, you know, attention-seeking recommendation to break up the big tech giants. I have to say, I am pleased to see her come out in support of a national right to repair law for farm equipment. Right to repair, even Apple. This was a fascinating story. Apple, just in case these right to repair, because Apple's been fighting it state by state, just in case it should happen that a national right to repair bill comes out, Apple apparently has a like emergency sealed plan for what to do in case right to repair becomes the law. They've apparently allocated resources over all of this. Anybody here on the panel want to stand up for the right to not repair?
No, but Apple would. Would Apple change all the screws and take the glue out of the battery?
No, they actually, in fact, I thought, let me see if I can find the story. Did we have it in the rundown or did I just read it and not bookmark it? I probably should have bookmarked it. They apparently have budgeted a certain, like $20 million. They have, yeah, here it is. This is actually from November. Nope, that's not it. That's not it. I searched for Plan B, and I found a different Plan B. I'll find it. But the problem is right now Apple's fighting it state by state because they want all repairs to go to the Apple store or to Apple directly. They don't want third-party repairs of iPhones. There's some merit in that. One of the things they say is, well, if you let a third party repair your iPhone, we can't guarantee its security afterwards.
Sure, but then I think Apple is doing, they're doing some really good things toward helping people who do want to repair their device. But if you start saying things like you can't repair your device, we're not going to give you the schematics for how to repair your device. We're going to make the screws, proprietary. What you're doing is, this is my phone that I paid for, yes. And you are acting like it's your phone. You're treating it like it's something that I've rented from you instead of something that I've purchased myself. I should have the right to make it less secure.
Yes.
That is my right as the owner of this phone to make those decisions. That's why I think the right to repair is a really great thing, because we need to be able to, right now, especially with iPhones and Apple devices, they're completely unrepairable without going directly to Apple or by using these really expensive things. They're difficult to figure out. You have to know what you're doing. iFixit is a great organization that helps us learn these things, but those kinds of user guides don't exist from the company themselves. And so we do risk potentially ruining our devices by just trying to do something as simple as fixing a cracked screen. That shouldn't be the case. I should have the right to get a screen fixed without worrying about, or just to be able to do it at all.
Here's the story. Motherboard, once again, they're good, boy. Internal documents show Apple's capable of implementing right to repair legislation. They prepared a report in April 2018, a year ago, that would make it possible to buy Apple genuine parts, to certify independent repairs, and place no restrictions on the type of repairs independent companies are allowed to do. Kyle Weens at iFixit, who is a big right to repair advocate, in fact, he has the site righttorepair.org, says, "This looks to me like a framework for complying with right to repair legislation. Right now, they're only offering it to a few mega chains. It seems clear to me it would be totally possible to comply with right to repair." My reading is it's a plan B, just in case.
You get pregnant?
Yeah, just in case. Interestingly, Warren did not mention Apple, but did mention John Deere and farm equipment, which is a big issue, and I'm sure an issue in the heartland where, obviously, a lot of voters live.
Where the hippie farmers live.
The hippie farmers. Sheryl Sandberg says Facebook's looking at ways to restrict access to Facebook Live. They don't want everybody to be able to do it after the Christchurch shooting and the video that was posted there.
My question to that is, what do they mean by restricting who can...
Yes.
Who can use it? How are they going to determine that? There's a little comment on that. It's based on whether or not they're complying with community standards and things like that. But that, bad things are going to show up on Facebook Live. They're just going to show up that way. And good people are going to not be able to post things on Facebook Live. How are they going to do it?
Aren't there already restrictions on who can do Facebook Live? I remember I had to get a certain number of hits Facebook videos. Oh, yeah, changed? Yeah,
no.
Okay.
It's wide open.
As Amy Webb says, these networks are optimized for speed and not for safety.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
As they have to be when you have 1.5 billion users.
You have to be. Why do you have to optimize for speed and not safety? I don't.
Because I want my video up now.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. You could put a speed bump in. We put speed bumps in our chat room. You don't get voiced right away. There's a 2-minute waiting period. It's not like we don't do background checks on you.
I can't, I can't get into your chat room at all.
You're probably banned for life.
I am. It says you're banned.
Can you unban Philip? They probably thought it was you pretending to be Philip. I don't know anybody who works there, but if anybody's listening, please.
Or as Facebook says, coordinated inauthentic activity.
That's me. that's the name of my biography. I'm so excited. I like to end every show with good news. You want some good news?
Yes, please.
Huawei tops $100 billion in revenue for the first time.
Way to go, Huawei.
Even though you can't buy it in the United States, huge growth for Huawei. Okay, maybe that's not the happy story. How about this one? Federal Trade Commission hands multi-million dollar fines to four robocalling companies.
That's good news.
Well,
yeah.
Except that they don't have a really good track record. The FCC, anyway, doesn't have a really good track record of collecting that money.
Verizon will do it for you. They charge you $3 now.
I thought they were going to do that for free, the spam, anti-spam. You have to pay for that?
I think they said recently $3.
I'm not going to pay.
But if I'm wrong, I'm wrong.
I just don't answer the phone. No, I saw. I put it on my Verizon phone. It said $3, please. I said, nyet.
It's like the indicator light on the Boeing 537.
Yeah, I don't want to. I'm not.
Pay
no extra,
extra for that.
No extra. And I thought there was one more good news story. Oh, yeah. Remember that horrible story about the guy who made the swatting call to police in 2017?
Oh, yeah.
That caused a death?
And two suicides afterwards.
Oh, no. Really? I didn't read about that.
Yeah, yeah. The niece of the guy. And then it was in if you've read more of that story, it came up.
It was the shooting death of an innocent Kansas resident who just was at the same address. Tyler Barris, what was his Twitter handle? Something like Mr. Swatter or something. 20 years in jail. Just a little word of warning. 20 years in jail.
He had done it.
Many times.
New Hampshire, Nevada, Massachusetts, Illinois, Utah, Virginia, all over the country.
It is illegal.
And the writer of that article says at the end, he mentions that it happened to him. He got swatted.
Oh, yeah. We've been swatted. I don't know if it was by the celebrity swatter, but we've been swatted. Fortunately, the Petaluma police are not aggressive in there. They came by. They said, you got any bombs in there? Somebody says he's going to shoot y'all. Anything going on in there? No. They did go down. They went down.
Was it a SWAT team? Was it a SWAT team?
No, it was it was detectives, right? A couple of cops. Okay. Yeah. We don't have a SWAT team here. But they did send down, it took a while, they sent down, I think, San Rafael or San Francisco for a dog to sniff the basement. This is in the old place. And that was actually when we hired an armed guard and had training on evacuations. I'll never forget the training. You remember this where they said, now, the key is if you've got an active shooter in your building, you want to wait till he reloads, then run.
Ouch.
You don't remember that? Yeah. Wait till you hear him reloading, then get the hell out.
You don't run towards him and take his gun away?
No. Although that is a tragic story. We should actually mention that one of the victims of the Christchurch massacre was a very beloved, well-known member of the tech community. And, I'm not prepared for this one. I have to pull up the story. We were talking about it on Windows Weekly. Give me a moment to get to my OneNote account.
Yeah, this is a good news story.
Yeah, what? I'm not ending with happy, am I?
No. That's because the world is so tragic right now.
Yeah, I just want to give this guy credit. Oh well. I can't find his name. That's terrible.
He was shot in the.
He was killed in the massacre. Yeah, and do you remember chat room? Do you remember who it was? Paul Thurrott was talking about it. He was a Microsoft MVP.
Yeah,
and had written a number of programs a lot of us know. Here it is. He was Lazy Worm. Thank you, ad blockers. Here we go. He was the publisher of Lazy Worm apps, and his name was Atta Eleyan, CEO of the company behind MetroTube and Lazy Worm apps, LWA Solutions, and Microsoft MVP, Windows Phone fanatic, 33 years old. So this hit the community very hard. Of course, all the deaths hit us all. Not a happy story to end with, but I'm sad to say that is the way the world is, and that is how we are going to end today's broadcast. I thank you so much for being here, Lori Gill. You can find her work at imore.com. She's managing editor there. What are you working on? Anything exciting?
I am right now. I've actually had the opportunity to interview 8 women in tech and entrepreneurs. And I'm going to be publishing stories about them throughout the month. So keep an eye out for that.
That'll be great.
Yeah, I'm very excited. Very wonderful women that I'm really excited about their experiences and being able to share it with others.
And when does the Harry Potter game come out?
We still don't know. My guess, though, based on Niantic's past with Pokemon Go, I'm going to say sometime in early to mid-July. That's going to be that's my prediction.
That's a good prediction. That gives me time to get to level 40 in Pokemon Go and abandon the game in a heartbeat for Harry Potter. Thank you, Lori. Great to see you. Thank you,
Thanks
too, to Philip
me.
Elmer DeWitt, the elder statesman of the Mac Reportage community, PED30.com. Anything you'd like to plug, Philip?
My jury duty? I don't know. You know,
that's good. You're going to have fun.
Yeah.
But you and a bunch of other retired folks. It'll be great.
I feel like I got to get something. Got to get a blog out before jury duty.
Yeah, because you can't.
Or I may not get one.
Yeah.
You know?
I did. Actually, I really enjoyed my jury duty. I was on a federal case. It was, do you remember those really awful Dateline To Catch a Predator shows where they would set up a fake house with a teenage, underage girl in it, except there was an adult pretending to be an underage girl trying to lure predators? And they had one of those houses was in Petaluma, and I was on the trial for that case. We get through the first, it was fun. I was taking notes. You know, there were judges, very serious. I'm going through the whole prosecution's case, paying attention. Prosecution wraps up. The judge says, "Go home. This was entrapment. There's no case here at all." But I want to vote. Nope. That's it.
So, I've been on a bunch of juries. I love it.
I love it. And honestly, if people don't do jury duty, then the only people who you'll get when you go to court is somebody who doesn't have the wherewithal to get off the jury duty. That's not good. you want people like Filmer DeBitt on your. I'm sorry, Philip.
That would get me off.
Elmer DeWitt. you could do the Princess Leia thing that they did in 30 Rock. That might work. Dan Patterson, he is at CBS Radio, a dignified personage who didn't deserve any of this, but I'm glad you were here. CNET producer at CNET, embedded at CBS News. You going to teach anybody anything important this week? You going to, got some exciting trainings coming up?
So I'll be in San Francisco interviewing Salesforce about AI ethics, which should be fascinating.
Wow.
And then up in Seattle interviewing Microsoft about defending democratic institutions. And you can find those stories on CNET.com as well as CBSNews.com at CBSNews.com/live. In fact, every day you can find me on CBSNews.com/live. It is our CBSN, our 24-hour station. And occasionally you can find me on CBS This Morning as well as CBS Evening News.
And are you ever on Star Trek Discovery?
No, but sometimes I get to go to screenings for the new episodes.
Fun. Thank you, Dan.
Yeah.
Cool job.
You too.
Yeah, good job, isn't it? It's awesome. Dan deserves it. He's a great reporter.
As are you guys.
All I do is rehash news. That's why I'm worried about the new copyright directive.
Me too.
That's all I do. We do this show every Sunday evening, roundabout. We try to start a little early now, 2:15 p.m. Pacific. That's 5:15 Eastern. That's 21:15 UTC. If you want to watch live, we have a live stream, audio and video, at twit.tv/live. If you're doing that, by all means, be in the chat room. Bunch of live viewers chatting amongst themselves, providing me with all my best lines. That's irc.twit.tv. We also welcome you in studio. We have an open studio policy. If you email tickets at twit.tv, we'd love to have you. We had a great studio audience today. Thanks for being here. From Westfield, Indiana, and Westfield or Fold? Westfold? Westfield. Nowhere. Westfield, Indiana. And from Toronto, Canada. Thank you for being here. We also have on-demand versions of the show available at our website, twit.tv, or subscribe. That'd be the best thing to do. If you subscribe, you'll get every episode the minute it's available, and plenty of time for your Monday morning commute. Have a safe April Fool's Day. Don't believe anything you read unless it's at Microsoft.com, and I will see you next time. Thanks for joining us. Another Twit is in the can. Bye-bye.